This is Pocket Watching with JT, the call-in financial talk show focused on helping you get your money right. Jason Thornton is a certified financial planner licensed in both tax and investments. Now, this is not personal financial advice. This is JT's real reaction to all your money and business questions. Are you deep in debt, living paycheck to paycheck, and looking for a way out? Call Pocket Watching with JT, the financial advisor for the people. Need more? Book your personal consultation with my man JT at pocketwatcher.net. Now, let's go pocket watching.
Hey, Pocket Watchers, welcome to Pocket Watching with JT. Listen, people, it is Money Mondays. This is the main show. You can call me other shows if you have questions, but tonight, this is the main show where I am inviting each and every one of you to give me a call. If you've got a money question, hopefully I have an answer for your question. If you got a personal financial question or if you got a business question, you want to run it by the Pocket Watcher. I am your certified financial planner on these live streaming streets, and I'm here to help you out. All right, so big shout out to the nearly 60,000 of you who have already subscribed to Pocket Watching with JT. Do your brother the favor, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, and share this content. All right, share the content. It absolutely helps. But before I start to take on calls, before we get into the financial questions and the business questions that you have, We got to have a quick conversation about what's all of this for? Like, what are we doing here, people? I mean, if you've seen the thumbnail, you saw a picture of Better Call Saul. Anyone who knows me in real life know that I'm a huge fan of Better Call Saul. The main reason why I watched the original show, Breaking Bad, was because of the character of Saul Goodman. Huge fan of the show. And if you don't know the show, you missed out on a great show, but you can catch up and you can watch all the episodes. The last episode aired not too long ago. But for a quick summary, Saul Goodman is a character that was on two amazing shows, which is very unusual, but he was an amazing character on two separate shows, Breaking Bad and his own spinoff show, Better Call Saul. He was an attorney, but he wasn't the regular attorney that you're used to. This was an attorney that would look at every opportunity to make as much money for himself as possible while he helped criminals stay out of jail. Right. That's a quick summary. There's so much other layers to it, but that's a quick summary. Huge fan of Better Call Saul. Well, when you think about it, it's actually a tragic story because his position as an attorney in the community and what he could have done and the money he could have made legitimately, you have to ask yourself the question, why go down this route? If you watch the show, you would know that the character of Jimmy McGill, the character of Saul Goodman, he had plenty of opportunities to make a lot of good, legitimate money. But there was something in him. There was some character flaw in Jimmy McGill that created Saul Goodman that would not allow him to go the normal route to gain whatever clout, whatever success, whatever money that he wanted. He couldn't do it that way. He wanted to do it his way. Well, why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up because someone recently sent me a story of a real life Saul Goodman, right? A real life Saul Goodman. We're going to watch a clip of it and then we're going to talk about it a little bit because this ties into money issues that we have on the individual level. Yeah, we can probably laugh at this guy who got caught up. But I want you to think, what are you doing with your money? Or what are you doing in your pursuit of getting more money that could get you caught up just like this guy? So I'm going to put it up here on the screen. We're going to have the real life Saul Goodman, a brother from, I believe, Dallas, Texas. And understand, This brother, he was a well-respected attorney. Why would he allow himself to get caught up with this? I have absolutely no idea, but we're going to watch the clip and we're going to talk about it a little bit. So here we go.
Attorney with a high-rise office in downtown Dallas has been arrested and charged in a drug money laundering investigation. A federal criminal complaint says 51-year-old Ray Jackson was caught in an undercover DEA sting laundering $300,000. The complaint says an opioid dealer the DEA was investigating took undercover agents posing as drug traffickers to the person he was using to launder money, and it was Jackson. The DEA says Jackson laundered drug money for the undercover agents, too. Fox 4's Stephen Dial has the details from the investigation that lasted several months. Stephen.
Steve, federal investigators say Jackson allegedly deposited money into an undercover DEA bank account, and he's now facing up to 20 years in prison.
Dallas attorney Ray Jackson was released on bond after an initial court appearance at the Earl Cabell Federal Building in downtown Dallas Friday on money laundering charges. It's the same courthouse he's represented clients as a defense attorney, including Don Hill, the late Dallas City Council member who went to prison after a 2009 bribery and corruption conviction.
And Jackson has appeared on Fox 4 as a guest legal analyst on several cases, including the Amber Geiger police shooting trial. Jackson is also a current member of the Dallas Area Rapid Transit Board of Directors. Court documents say a high-level opioid drug dealer in a DEA investigation offered to introduce an undercover agent to someone he was using to launder drug money.
Is it clear that what he's being asked to do is launder money as opposed to render some sort of services or to...
All right, real quick. So let's talk about this. Just to make sure everybody's on the same page. You have this very well-respected attorney. And I've got clients who are attorneys, and I have a clear understanding of the work it takes for them to do their job and get on this level. Understand that the law in general is a highly competitive field. There are so many lawyers, it's ridiculous. There's so many lawyers. There's so many people who go to law school, eventually graduate, pass the bar. There's so many lawyers. So for one, to be a African-American attorney, to break through the large crowd of all these other attorneys, to then position yourself to be a well-respected person in your community. He's on these different boards. He's well respected. Even the news come to him for analysis and stuff like that. Very well respected person. What is it that's missing in his life where he has to engage in illegal activity? What's missing? What is he trying to gain with money? And when you find out how much money it is, it's ridiculous. It's not a lot of money, just to let you know. It's not a lot of money that he was doing. But once again, he was snitched out because he was already laundering money for a criminal. This criminal gets caught up. So he snitches on the guy who's laundering his money. See, that right there, there's no honor among thieves. Regardless of all the lies that they tell you about sticking to the code, no snitching. Listen, everybody snitch. Everybody snitches. The people who talk about I never snitch, those are probably some of the biggest snitches you'll ever find, right? Everybody snitches. So one, he's an attorney. Worked extremely hard to become an attorney. He's dealing with criminals because he is a defense attorney. He should already know that these guys snitch all the time. So while he's already laundering money for one guy, this guy gets caught up, snitches on him to the point where the government basically sets up a deal for him to then launder money for some more criminals. Once again, these are undercover agents. These are criminals he doesn't know. It's not like these are criminals that he's had some past dealing with. These are new criminals. These new criminals were undercover agents. They got them caught up. So make sure we're all on the same page here. But check this out.
Help a client with a transaction.
John Helms is a former assistant U.S. attorney. He is not involved in this case. Helms says investigators gave more details than usual.
They wanted to show that they think they have a lot of evidence that this was really a corrupt deal.
Court documents say the drug dealer and undercover agent posing as an opioid drug trafficker allegedly met in Jackson's downtown Dallas office last year. The court documents say while discussing the alleged deal, the undercover agent told Jackson, quote, it's straight dope money. Documents say Jackson allegedly replied, I don't care where the money comes from. Investigators say,
remember, this is a guy he doesn't know very well. Not only is this a guy he doesn't know very well, the only thing that he knows of the guy is that he's a criminal. That's the only thing he really knows about this guy is that he is a criminal. But he's talking so loosely, and it's like the man, greed to get you every time.
Say the two allegedly negotiated a 4% fee and bonus. Court documents say Jackson allegedly suggested setting up a shell corporation, and the pair agreed on an alleged $100,000 trial run. Investigators say Jackson allegedly asked, quote, I can get out at any point, right? Long as y'all get your money. The undercover agent replied, when you are ready to be done, then we're going to be done. Investigators say the following months, a Jackson law firm bank account made three deposits to an undercover DEA account totaling $95,000. Court documents say 3 months later, the Jackson law firm bank account made 11 more deposits totaling $285,000.
All right, so let me explain a couple of things to you guys so that you can understand how this stuff works. Y'all can start giving me a call. You can give me a call. 515-602-9778. That's 515-602-9778. All right. Money laundering. What is money laundering? All right. Trust me. As a certified financial planner, I've had to study this stuff just a little bit. Just a little bit. I know some of this stuff. So what is money laundering? Money laundering is a systematic way of trying to disguise funds that you receive through an illegal means, and you're trying to disguise it to make it seem as if the money that you're earning is through a legal means. Let me give you an example. All right. So let's say you have a dope boy. You have someone who makes their money through the illegal sale of drugs. Now, this dope boy would like to buy a house, or they'd like to do various things within this U.S. economy that requires documentation and proof of your income. Well, this dope boy can't simply buy the house in cash. Now, understand that most dope boys don't have the money to buy a house in cash, not the low-level dope boys. You know, maybe big guys can just buy it in cash, but they shouldn't do that anyway, and they wouldn't do that. But let's try to stay focused here. So they need a mortgage, right? Even if they could buy it in cash, that would be a big red flag, so whatever. But they need a mortgage. Now, to then go to a lending institution to get a mortgage, they're going to need certain things. They're going to need certain documents to prove their income. Well, a dope boy doesn't get a W-2. So this dope boy is going to have to figure out a way to make their dirty money seem legitimate in order to enter into and do regular financial transactions with the civilized world, right? So what this dope boy would probably do, they would probably go to some financial professional and say, hey, I need some tax returns. Trust me. Listen, I've been doing this for years. I've had guys come in my office smelling very strongly like weed, and they give me the same pitch. But basically, they say, listen, bro, I need some tax returns. I'm trying to get a house. My old lady, you know, she's been nagging me. She wants to get a house. She's tired of renting. What can I do to get a house? Well, I would say you You need to be able to prove your income. You need to be able to prove that you can afford this mortgage. Oh, bro, I ain't got no problem affording this mortgage, man. I make like, you know, I make about $2,000-$3,000 a day, you know, so I can afford the mortgage. I said, okay, well, if you can afford the mortgage, if you're making $2,000 or $3,000 a day, it shouldn't be an issue. All you got to do is show them your tax returns for the past 2 years and you should be fine. I ain't got no tax returns. How do you not have any tax returns? You make $2,000 or $3,000 a day. You just told me that. How do you not have any tax returns? Long story short, clearly, long story short, he has to now come up with tax returns. Well, now what business does he have? Right? What business does he have? Can't say that he's selling drugs. Now he has to come up with some business, and this business needs to be heavy on the cash side, meaning a business where you have a lot of customers that pay you in cash and they don't pay you with debit cards, credit cards, stuff like that. So you got to look into industries that are heavy in cash. Well, strip clubs can be heavy in cash. So now the person is claiming that he owns a strip club, you know, or he's a barber, or he owns a barbershop. There's a lot of cash in that. So now he has to create fraudulent tax returns that will then state that he makes X amount of money. Now he's paying taxes on his dirty money, even though he's money laundering. He's paying taxes on his dirty money, but he is not really reporting the total amount of money he's making. He's just reporting enough that will qualify him to get this mortgage. Understand all the work that has to take place for that middleman money launderer, right? The person who's drafting all these documents. Understand the work that they have to do. They have to then first start fraudulent, empty corporations or companies, right? It could be an LLC. It doesn't have to be a C corp or S corp. It could be an LLC, whatever it is. You have to now start drafting documents that he knows is fraudulent. You have to go to the Secretary of State. Let's say you get the person in an LLC. Then you go to the IRS, get an EIN number, put those together. Now you got to then go to a bank, open up a bank account in this new business, right? In this new business name. You need to create fake invoices and stuff like that because you need some kind of paper trail if you were to be audited or something like that. So now you're doing all of these things and all of this paperwork to create a fake business so that you can then funnel the dirty money into this fake business and then pay taxes on the dirty money that you just cleaned, in a sense, through this money laundering. A lot of work that has to take place. Now, for those of you who are in the chat right now, I would like for you to take a guess of how much money did this prominent attorney, how much money did he request to do this job? Now, understand that this job has absolutely destroyed his life. Destroyed his life. He was on the top of the food chain when it comes to his community not too long ago. Now he's at the bottom, all right? He's at the bottom. He was offered to do a trial test on his money laundering skills. They wanted him to launder $100,000. Any guesses? Okay, we got some guesses popped up. Okay, all right, so here's a couple. We got Debt-Free Dad. Debt-Free Dad said $15,000. And understand that Debt-Free Dad is an attorney. Debt-Free Dad is an attorney. He's seen a lot of this. Debt-Free Dad, no. $15,000, incorrect. We got MHOH says $30,000. Did he risk his entire life over $30,000 to launder money for a criminal he never knew before because that criminal ended up being an undercover agent? Did he risk it for $30,000. Nope, not $30,000. 25, no. 40,000, we got Philip Sadiq in the building. 40,000, no, sir. None of y'all are even close. We got Mr. Nitty says 12 to 15. Nope. Nope, 10,000, nope. All right, some of y'all get kind of close, so I'll let you know. So on the $100,000 that he was going to launder for this undercover agent, $4,000. He was getting paid $4,000 to launder this money, plus a bonus of an upfront $1,000. So it was a 4%. His fee for laundering money was 4%, but he also needed a bonus 1% upfront. That 1% is just $1,000. So altogether, it was $5,000. $5,000 all together. Now, let me explain something to you guys. If someone was to come to me and have me do this legitimately, like legitimately say, hey, bro, I got a business, but I don't have any paperwork. It's a legitimate business. Let me make sure that I'm clear about this. It's a legitimate business. They come to me as a financial advisor and say, listen, I've got a business. It grew really fast. I have no business entity, no structure, no accounting system, nothing. I have absolutely nothing. I want to get the business organized properly. I can tell you right now, I would charge more than $5,000 for legitimate services. Like for the actual work that this attorney did fraudulently, I would have to do the same amount of work legitimately. I would have to create a business entity. I would have to get the EIN number. I would have to help them set up the bank account. I would have to help them set up some accounting system. If I had to do all of that from scratch, and this person has absolutely nothing to show for any documents, I would probably be charging like $5,000. I mean, if he has absolutely nothing and they want me to do all the work, I'd probably be charging. The point I'm trying to make is the man has lost his life, right? I mean, he's living, but he's not living the life that he had before. He has lost his life and his lifestyle over an amount of money that he could have easily made legitimately. It's not as if the work that he did was something that was super easy. Because I went to the FBI website, and looked at all the work that he had to do. The man was working for days and days for this $5,000. Listen, I charge $450 an hour. If I'm working for days and days and days, I'm probably charging you a good, I mean, my invoice is going to be about the same as his invoice, and I'm not risking my life. That's why I don't understand it. This guy, apparently the undercover agent gave him $100,000 in a black backpack. It was then his job to take the other $95,000, because remember, $5,000 was his fee. The other $95,000, he had to open up various bank accounts because he didn't want to put all the money in one account. That would be a red flag. So what I'm reading out of this, what it seems like he was doing some kind of structuring with the deposits. So when you're structuring the deposits, basically what you're doing is you're trying to put money in the bank under the threshold that will create a red flag that would get the IRS or the government notified that, hey, we got a guy with a whole bunch of cash. Maybe you need to check this out. So he's opening up various bank accounts over the span of days, putting in little chunks of money each one of these days of the total $95,000 that he's laundering. All of this work. Honestly, if he's any type of reputable attorney, which the whole community of Dallas thought he was, he should have been getting paid to do this just legitimately. Like, it just makes no sense. It's extremely sad. And the reason why I'm saying that it's sad, and shouts out to Philip Siddiq, is that he didn't have the capacity. He did not have the capacity. That's the issue. All of the hoops that he's jumping through, all of the work that this attorney was doing, if he just would have put that energy into legitimate work, he would have got paid the same or more. That's the main point that I'm trying to get to. He would have got paid the same amount of money or more. But no, once again, even an attorney can fall victim to wanting to live the cool rock star lifestyle and have some sort of street credibility to him. He wanted to be cool with the criminals. You know, he wanted to be down. And now a man in his 50s is going to jail for 5 years because he did plead guilty. I want to be clear on this. The man pled guilty to the crime. He's going to be serving 5 years in jail. He has lost his law license. He will never be able to be an attorney again for the rest of his life. That is over. Understand the time, the effort, the years that he put into becoming an attorney. That is now gone. Over $5,000. Now, I know he's probably been doing this for years, and his fee is 4% on the money that he washes. But I'm telling you guys, it's not worth it. At the end of the day, it's not worth it. Why don't you just be a lame like me? Just be a guy to get your money legitimately. Even if it doesn't come super fast, trust me, it comes. Don't come super, super fast, but it adds up. All right, I'm going to go to these lines. I'm going to go to these phone lines. I got caller from 202, then caller from 313. So just hold tight for 1 second. I'm going to these phone lines. Y'all just bear with me while I bring this up. But listen to me. If you are on hold right now, do your brother the favor. If you are on hold, make sure that you are talking straight through the phone. Any device that you are listening to me on, you can simply turn that device down and listen to me straight through the phone. All right, so I'm going to caller. Let me see here. Going to caller from the 202 area code first, then 313. Talk directly through the phone, and I am going to bring you guys up right now. Here we go. So caller from 202 area code, you should be live on the air with Pocket Watching with JT. What's going on?
JT, this is debt-free dad. You knew I was gonna call them for scamming attorneys. Come on now.
Listen, man. If I had more time, I would have dropped the link and brought you up. But trust me, I got something planned for us to do a collab on. Just pay attention to your email. But listen, I know you got stories. I want to hear what's going on. Why would this brother, who's in a major market, you're talking about Dallas? He was on TV. He was on boards. He was a prominent defense attorney. What would, other than maybe a lot of student loan debt, what would make him decide I'm also going to launder money for drug dealers?
Well, I tell you, the funny thing is exactly everything you talk about on your show. Mm-hmm. It boils down to finances. Mm-hmm. I've seen attorneys in private practice who represent some of the biggest athletes as agents, who mm-hmm. represented some of the biggest athletes you can think of in criminal cases. And an attorney is like a rapper. It when you're in private practice, you got to spend money so people think you win and you're successful. Right. And that's what gets you more clients. So uh-huh. it's a bad cycle. And a lot of attorneys just ain't got no paper like that. They're not really good with their finances, bro. Mm.
Listen, I can testify that. I have attorneys as clients, and as eloquent as they are in the courtroom and how great they can draft their documents and their motions and stuff, when it comes to simple financial principles, they're out to lunch. Like, they have no idea basic stuff when it comes to accounting and financing and investing and stuff like that. And plus, when you're dealing with someone with a private practice like that, especially like defense or slip and fall attorneys, the money comes in waves. They may get $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 one month. And then for like the next three or four months, like, barely anything comes in. And when you don't know how to budget your money, you can end up in a bad spot really quick. Have you seen anything like that?
Yeah, we see it all the time. It was funny. One of the sheriff's deputies back when I was doing defense work, he told me, because, you know, if you got a bunch of credit card debt and creditors start suing you, the sheriff served that paperwork for you to come to court. And mm-hmm. the deputy was like, man, you won't believe some of these guys in here with these $3,000 shoes on. They can't pay their mortgage, man. All of their stuff is just kind of at risk. But the thing that I wanted to add, though, is I could tell the dude was a smart attorney and was a good lawyer at the actual practice of law. Because when you do defense work and solo practice, guys only offer you that if you're actually good at your job. That's just if you're a bum trash attorney, ain't nobody on the block doing anything criminal gonna want you to represent them in any capacity or do anything. So one, he probably had financial problems. Two, he was actually probably good at his job for them to even offer this. Because you think about it, defense attorneys, I know of an attorney who is in federal prison for brokering drug deals. Because you meet all of the players. You represent you represent the supplier. But 6 months later, you may represent the distributor. So you kind of meet all of the players in the game. You know what I mean?
Right. You become that middle. Like, I'll tell you, I'm such a big fan of Better Call Saul, man. The last episode was crazy. But that's basically what he was doing. He was the middleman. He was the guy with the connections, the guy with a drawer full of cell phones. He was able to connect the supplier with the dealer and whatnot. But I just don't get it. Like, I understand the work that it takes to become an attorney. There are so many, like, listen, whenever I drive by some billboard or some advertisement talking about an attorney will work and get my speeding ticket fixed for like $45, I'm always scratching my head like, how are you paying the rent? $45? Like, I just don't get it. So for him to be able, like you said, he had to be good because the drug dealers and the guys wouldn't be coming to him to launder their money if he wasn't also good at being a defense attorney. So if he's a good defense attorney and he's charging the fees that you would have to assume that he's charging, what's the appeal of this petty little $5,000 to launder drug money? Like, I don't see the appeal. He could make more money legitimately.
Right. They want that money coming in fast, man. They, lifestyle creep, the more money they make. If a lawyer get most lawyers, if they get a $100,000 settlement, they get broke off with $33,000. Mm-hmm. I've known lawyers who say, you know what? I'm going to take my whole staff to Aruba for 2 weeks, which sounds great, and that's dope. But if you ain't got your money plan right, it's going to be a problem. And so the funny thing about it, and you know, I think I leave you with this. It's funny because as a prosecutor, if I'm investigating a crime, this is the first thing you got to think about. Mm-hmm. If you got some type of credentials behind your name, JD, CPA, MD, if you got credentials by your name and you're doing stuff with street goons, I don't give a damn about the street goons. I want you, because the cases against the smart guys with the credentials by your name, that's how people become prosecutors, state prosecutors, and governors. Nobody can become a governor from prosecuting a bunch of Pookies and Ray-Ray.
Ray-Ray's right. It's like, I got Pookie and Ray-Ray off the street. Yeah, good job. Good job.
Yeah, if you're a professional and you're in business with guys who aren't professionals, at the end of the day, the biggest bullseye is going to be on you because you clearly should have known better, and that prosecutor is going to make his bones on your name. So
that's literally what just happened. They took the opioid dealer or whatever. That was on him. I guess while he was in jail and explaining what was going on, they eventually said, oh, yeah, now we can go after the guy who's laundering your money. He wasn't under any type of investigation. The reason why he came up on the authorities' radar is because a guy he was laundering money for, probably, I have to assume, a Pookie or Ray Ray, who he was laundering money for, snitched up. You said, he was the guy with the biggest target on his back for authorities to come after. And now his whole life, he's 50-something years old. Like, he's going to get out in 5 years. I believe he'll get out. But in 5 years, when he's almost in his 60s, and now he can no longer practice law, and I'm sure they're probably tracing down all the money that he's made on laundering money for other people, and they're seizing assets, and they're probably also hitting up a tax fraud because he probably didn't report the income from the laundering money. He didn't probably report that. So he's gonna get out in about 5 years. But what is he going out to? He probably doesn't have any skill set other than being a lawyer.
Yeah, he's going to go out to absolutely nothing. And the sad thing about it is, you know, he even when he gets out, he can't do anything. Even, you know, some lawyers, they try to spend to consultant or real estate, but a lot of states, you can't do real estate if you got a felony. So,
right.
I mean, he's just going to really be asked out, man. He might get a job somewhere as somebody's paralegal. That's really, real talk, that's probably his best option to do something once he's done.
Yeah, but it's not going to be at any reputable firm. It'll probably be a solo practitioner who just needs some help or something like that. Or maybe he can do some legal aid volunteer work. But any reputable big white shoe firm isn't going to want to touch him at all.
Nah. Your name is mud. Is yeah. You know, a lot of times when you work at firms like that, I had a partner who worked at a firm, big time firm too, made a crap load of money. And he just got charged. The charge was ultimately dismissed. It was BS. Mm-hmm. But on the mere charges alone, they just were like, "Nope, we through with you." And he felt some type of way, as he should have, because if you think about it,
right.
you would think like, "Man, I work with a bunch of lawyers. They can look at this and see that it's BS."
Right.
But they got a reputation to handle. You know what I mean? So I get it.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, Debt-Free Dad, man, thank you so much. Y'all be on the lookout. Me and Debt-Free Dad will be collabing very, very soon. Thanks for coming up, bro.
Peace, bro.
All right. All right, so we got caller from 313, area code. Caller from 313. You are live on the air with Pocket Watching with JT. What's going on?
You're on, JT.
Good.
Yeah, that's a crazy story. I don't know what criminals think, but especially if you're an attorney, because attorneys are like number five highest probability of like, occupation to be a millionaire, just off that.
It's ridiculous. This guy, I mean, like Debt-Free Dad was saying, this isn't like a horrible attorney. This was a good attorney that probably had a great reputation. He, even in the news story, talked about how a prominent political figure in the Dallas area, when he was up on fraud charges, he sought out this guy, Ray Jackson. He sought him out. So he's got a great mind for the law, you have to assume. But at the same time, he's not smart enough to say, maybe some brand new criminal that I don't have any history with, because it was an undercover agent. So it's not like this guy has like this long storied history with him. This brand new guy that I don't know really wants me to launder $300,000. Eventually, it was $300,000, but he started him out with $100,000. Like, what are you doing? Like, what? Even Saul Goodman, if you know the story, when he was originally bribed, he didn't take the bribe because he didn't know him. Like, I'm not taking a bribe from someone I don't know. You shouldn't take a bribe either way. But come on, someone you don't know, that's how you get got. But go ahead.
Do you know if he was going through, like, any financial issues?
I would love to hear that. I'm still looking through, and if I get any more info, I'll let you guys know. But I don't see anything. Like I was talking with Debt-Free Dad, you know, a moment ago. I'm just assuming it was lifestyle creep. He's 50-something years old. I'm sure he probably had student loans. He had a lifestyle that he had to keep up with. I'm sure if he's known as the defense attorney in Dallas, I'm sure he drove a very nice car. He had probably a very expensive home. And I'm sure he dressed very well. Well, the money comes in waves when you're an attorney like that. So he probably just needed it to help him, to help supplement the low times of his life. But that comes down to budgeting and actually, you know, living a lifestyle that your actual money can afford, other than trying to, you know, live a crazy lifestyle. So people out there, even if you're not a doctor, a lawyer, or, you know, some high earning person, you can see that even the people who make the money you wish you were making, they still have money problems because they have spending problems. Get your spending in check, you'll be able to actually live a better life.
Yeah, isn't that why like teachers are in the top five chance of being millionaires in the United States at least?
Well, based on the study that I saw, when it came to the top five professions to be a millionaire, I remember it was engineer, it was an accountant, it was teacher. I think lawyer was in there, and also like just a general business owner. And the reason why that the teachers were so high, most people are like, teachers don't make a whole lot of money. Well, yeah, but they're also a situation where they have a retirement plan that's somewhat generous, depending on, you know, what state they're in or the school district. But the retirement plan was somewhat generous if they was actively investing in it and they lived a lifestyle that was not extravagant. If you live a lifestyle that's not extravagant and you buy a home, right? Say it again.
Then the teachers get like a 403B.
A 503B is basically like a nonprofit 401k. But there's also a pension, but you know, they're doing away with a lot of pensions. But yeah, if you are investing in your employer's retirement plan and you have a home that's largely paid off and you don't live outside your means, you will most likely retire a millionaire. The issue is people want to be millionaires at age 21 and they make stupid decisions at age 21 trying to become a millionaire so damn early that it puts them in a spot where they'll probably never be a millionaire. They probably have a negative net worth and they'll probably die with a negative net worth because they don't think long term. They only think short term.
Right. Yeah. But I do have two questions not related to this still.
All right. So I got a couple of calls. So hit me with your number one question, and then maybe we can follow back with that other question next week.
Right now I'm a electrical engineer. I'm just trying to go back to school for that should be a CFP.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I was wondering, like, what advice do you have for someone who's gonna go over to being an accountant and being a CFP, like what the thing to look out for?
This is what I would tell you. The fact that you were in an industry before, you were an electrical engineer, and now you're going to go into, you know, financial services, be a CFP, you know, an accountant for people.
You need to tell you, sorry, yeah. Not main.
Yeah, but I'm saying in general, what you should focus on while you're studying and while you're doing things. One, I would attempt to try to get in with a financial planning firm before you go full-fledged CFP, because you don't have to be a CFP to first practice, to first maybe get your Series 65 license. You know, the startup cost and the time that it takes to get your Series 65 is nowhere near the time and the money that you would have to deal with becoming a CFP. So if you're filling it out, my suggestion would be, hey, how about you look for a financial planning firm that's in your area. Let them know that, hey, I'm coming from this former profession, because they're going to know, hey, great, we can invest some time in you to get you licensed. And then you can go back to all the other engineers that you know, because engineers make good money usually. They can say, okay, great, you can be the guy to bring in all the engineers to the firm so we can manage their money so that we can make financial plans for them. Get your feet wet first before you go full-fledged, go back to school and, you know, get into a financial planning education program and then take the CFP exam, because you still need 3 years of education even after you, I mean, of experience, 3 years of experience even after you pass the CFP exam, which you have to get the education first before you can even take the CFP exam. You still got to get 3 years of experience before you can even use the three letters behind your name. So if you're going to do all of that, I would say first, get the experience, go to a financial planning firm. They'll probably help you study for the Series 65. And then you'll know if that's something that you want to do or not. I wouldn't go all in at once. Does that make sense?
Even if it's because the going will be free for me, because my job offers education assistance, even knowing that, just, mm-hmm. You still recommend it?
Even if the education is free, you still don't know if that's what you want to do or not. You don't know if that's what you want to do or not. I would say get your feet wet first before you go full-fledged. Now, if you're going to get education for free while you're working for your employer, you might want to take maybe a master's program that has financial planning in it that's registered with the CFP board. That way, even if you don't like financial planning, you can do a lot of other stuff with that master's degree in finance with financial planning within it. You see what I'm saying? Don't box yourself in, because this isn't for everybody. You might not actually like this, But if you have a master's degree in accounting or a master's degree in finance, that would also qualify you to sit for the CFP exam. Now you have more options. Okay?
I got you.
All right. You have a good one. All right, people, here we go. We got callers from 479, callers from 425 and 312. So caller from 479. You are live on the air with Pocket Watching with JT. What's going on?
Hey, JT. Once again, watching you got for a while now. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
First off. Yeah, you've been helping me kind of indirectly help me with my business. So thank you.
Thank you.
I just had a quick question because my business kind of took off over the last 2 years and I got hit with an audit from the IRS.
All right. Well, first, congratulations on your business growing. All right. That's number one. Number two. All right. Let's talk about this audit. So do you understand the documents that they are sending you? Because when you normally get audited from the IRS, there's a couple of ways it can go down. One, it can be a straight fishing expedition, meaning they have no idea if anything's right or anything is wrong. They just want general records and information because they don't know what's going on. Number two, they know exactly what they feel is incorrect. And they're basically saying, we are going to disallow certain deductions that you claimed unless you can justify these deductions with some sort of documentation. So do you know what type of audit or what they're questioning about your tax return?
My last year business blew up and I filed in like March of this year and I got the letter maybe 2 weeks ago and it seems like I took it to an attorney and he said it seemed like it was a phishing one because he said the sales grew too fast. And that was, I own a moving company and a cleaning company. And so like I tripled in size. So I went from like $1 million a year to about almost 5 million. And then this year I doubled that. So there's also, they sent two things saying that they wanted to overlook everything. And they said I did not file monthly payroll, but I was using ADP at the time.
Well, I can tell you this. If you were using ADP as your payroll service company, then they have a liability to make sure that those documents, the 941s and everything, were being filed correctly. So if something went wrong on their end, then you need to lean on them and they need to rectify any issues there. So I don't feel too worried about the payroll tax issue because you had a reputable payroll company that was supposed to be doing it. If there was some issue, they should clean that up, but you got to make sure you're staying on top of it. So whatever attorney or accountant that you are hiring to help navigate you through this, because I would never suggest you do this on your own. Don't do this on your own, right? Get an attorney or an accountant. They can help you because trust me, there's things that you don't know that will trip you up, right? You want to make sure you get with someone who's done this before. But this is what I would say. Based on the increase, that makes sense. Now, were you making quarterly estimated tax payments to justify this like ridiculous increase in income? Like, did you owe at the end of the year and were you able to pay, or what happened?
Well, I owed at the end of the year and I paid, and I paid what my accountant said to pay, what was needed to pay. I always keep reserves at the end of the throughout the year to pay any
just in case
unexpected tax bills I have. But I got three huge contracts, one with Walmart, Amazon, and Wayfair. And so I just tripled in like pay, like people I had to hire, equipment I used, and my accountant was writing off the loans on all the trucks and equipment and things that we were doing that we were having to purchase.
Well, I don't know about business. I don't know about writing off loans. That sounds weird. You don't
not the loans, but like it was like something that he said, like, it was like expensing out something.
Yeah, what I think you're talking about, I'm assuming. What he did was, I guess because of your expansion and you had to buy a lot more trucks, that he went ahead and he took the special election to take the 100% depreciation of the trucks during the year that you bought it. That's what I'm assuming what's going on. So you can do a 179 special election of depreciation. So let's say you have a truck that cost, you know, $100,000. Well, this is a pretty big truck. It's over 6,000 pounds. It's 100% business use. If you do it the right way, you should qualify to be able to write off the entire cost of the truck in the year that you bought the truck. So the only thing that I would say in this situation, as long as the accountant who was helping you prepare the tax return is a reputable accountant, right? And you kept good records, and based on what you're saying, I mean, this isn't cash transactions. You're dealing with like huge companies that probably sent you a 1099 at the end of the year that justifies the income. And as long as you can justify the business deductions that the accountant helped you with, you should be fine. It seems like this is just a phishing thing where they're just looking to see, hey, what's going on? I wouldn't sweat too much, but make sure you're dealing with an attorney or an accountant who has done this before. And if the accountant who prepared your tax return has never defended someone before the IRS in an audit before, you may need to hire someone to help them. Because I'm telling you, this is a special thing that a lot of people don't know. Like, you, if you go to school to be a CPA, they don't teach you this. How do I know? I have a degree in accounting, right? And like, I have all the college credits that would allow me to sit for the CPA exam. I can tell you right now, they don't teach you this. They don't teach you how to defend a client before the IRS. That's something that you learn on the job. After you graduate and you go to a firm that deals with compliance issues with the IRS, you will learn how to do this on the job. And if your accountant's never done this before, I would suggest that you hire someone who can work with them. You know, this isn't like a good guy, bad guy thing, but you just want to make sure that you have someone on your side who's done this before that will make sure that, you know, all of your rights are being protected. You don't want to slip up and do something that would actually hurt you in the long run. Does that make sense?
No, that totally does. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, but it sounds like this is, like, for me, if I was taking on this type of case based on the very limited information that you gave me, I would feel extremely confident that we'd be able to get this thing closed out without a big issue. Like, maybe some of your business deduction may be disallowed, but you're not going to walk away with handcuffs. It's not going to be a big deal. Maybe you end up paying a couple $1,000 more in tax because of a few deductions that were disallowed. But this isn't something that I would sweat about at night. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you. And I also wanted to thank you for advice. You might not remember, but it was like a year ago and I was just watching you. So to let everyone know, yes, so your finances and your business, your personal finances should match your business finances. And with that, I saved. So now if I do have a downturn, my guy, I have enough to pay everyone and all my expenses for 2 years. So I just wanted to say to everyone, definitely should listen to JT. It definitely works.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for calling in. All right. You have a good one.
All right. Thank you. You too.
All right. See here, man. We're trying to save people's lives here, man. We're changing lives here with Pocket Watching with JT. Nah, I want to give myself more credit than I deserve. It's just I do this. I do. I've been doing this for a long time, people. And I understand a lot of you out there, you're small business owners, and you're so focused on your business being a success. I want your business to be a success, but understand there's certain things that you don't know that you need to help your business be a total success. The back office stuff, the financial stuff, that's what I'm here to try and help you with. Quick shout out to this super chat that just came up. We got Ron B, JB in the building says, can you make six figures as a NYC and New York City public school teacher? You can make six figures as a New York City public school teacher within a few years if you do it right. And yes, there's a pension and a tax deferred annuity TDA. I mean, you could, listen, as bad a of a rap that the teaching profession gets, it is still a career that you can go down and have an amazing life with, but you still have to have a budget. You still have to live within your means. You can't live a rock star lifestyle and be a teacher. Hell, here's the issue. Most rock stars can't live a rock star lifestyle. That's why rock stars go broke. That's why NFL players, NBA players, any type of athlete, entertainers, actress, whatever, they go broke. Because even rock stars can't live a rock star lifestyle forever. Maybe 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. But in the long term, they go broke. That's the truth. That's the truth. Thank you so much. All right. So I got caller from 425, caller from 312, and caller from 516. So first going to caller from 425. You are live on the air with Pocket Watching with JT. What's going on?
Hey, JT. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
So anyway, I'm just going to be real quick because I talked to you a few months ago that I was like, I had $2,000 in my bank and I wanted to start my business and you advised me to get a W-2 job.
That sounds like me.
So
yes.
I wanted to update you that I got a W-2 job and I just like want to thank you for your advice and your knowledge and steering me in the right direction. And I've been working with my business on the side too.
Good. Good. Because listen, it's not that I don't believe in your ambitions to be a great business owner. I believe that it's possible in this country to build a booming business. But you can't build a booming business with little to no resources. Because what's ultimately going to happen is, yeah, you're going to put yourself in a financial situation where you're going to take on more risk than you can. You are going to make decisions under pressure because your home life is not in order. That's why most likely I suggested that you get that W-2 job so that you can have some stability in your life financially. And then you can build that business as you go and you have an emergency savings fund. You pay down debt. You're able to have the breathing room to create a business plan that makes sense. Because I'm telling you, when you're broke and you're self-employed, you start to take on any job that comes through the door. You try to figure out any way where you can make money. That's partly why I believe this attorney that I was talking about earlier in the show, why he started laundering money for criminals, the very criminals who he was defending in the courtroom. He started laundering money. Why? Because he's self-employed. His money probably got funny and he was looking for any new way to bring money in. And he's going to jail for 5 years. He's lost his entire identity, which is being a well-respected attorney in the Dallas area. Why? Because he did not have a good financial foundation on the personal side, and his business put enough pressure on him for him to literally, to me, lose his mind and become a criminal himself. So I'm happy I could help. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Oh, I have one more thing to tell you.
Sure.
So I know that you did a reaction video to Mike Winnett.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm in a private community that he runs, and he posted your video in the community, and we're just like saying like we all loved it, like how you reacted to him. So yeah.
Hey, listen, so thank you.
He saw it.
Thank you, because he actually did reach out to me recently, and we are working on getting our schedules together, and we're going to do a collab together. So thank you, I appreciate it.
Oh my God, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he is my favorite. He's one of my favorites. You, Coffeezilla, and those are my three favorites. I can't wait.
Yeah. Thank you. Let everybody in the group know that, you know, I appreciate them saying that they liked my reaction video to Mike Winnett, because now, because of you guys saying that you liked it, me and him will be doing a collab very soon. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Very cool. Have a good day.
All right. You too. Perfect. Listen, people, it's you guys. It's the supporters, it's the pocket watchers, it's the subscribers who make this content what it is. Thank you guys so, so much. So here we go. Caller from 312, caller from 312 area code. You're live on the air with Pocket Watching with JT. What's going on?
Yo, JT, what's up, man? How you doing tonight?
Man, I am doing great, man. I feel on top of the world. What's going on with you?
Hey, so I got something similar to the subject you've been talking about tonight, but it's more of like a PP loan situation, if you get what I'm saying.
Let's do it. I want to hear it.
Okay, so long story short, I got me and my friend.
Mm-hmm.
My friend, he took out a PPP loan, you know, during the pandemic because it was hard for everybody. So,
right,
you know, he was one of those type people that thought that, you know, he can do the PPP loan. The government wasn't going to do nothing. It just was going to be he get the money and then it's all in the wind.
Right.
So what's going on now is he took out $40,000. And I know you've been doing
Okay.
And I've been seeing your videos on YouTube about, like, you know, how Biden signed this new bill and he's going to start tackling all these people that took out all this money, fraudulently.
Uh-huh.
So what he did was, we live in the same city. So is money laundering, is it when you, I don't know if this would be considered money laundering. So what he did was, when he got the money, he started a business.
Mm-hmm. All right. So based on my information, and listen, I'm in a fraternity. I'm a proud member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated, people. I have brothers who are in almost every walk of life. I have brothers who are attorneys, brothers who work for police agencies, brothers who work for federal agencies. So I get to have, you know, some insider conversations with these brothers. I can tell you this because I had this conversation with one of my fraternity brothers. And my understanding based on this conversation is if someone went and got this PPP loan, and for him to get $40,000, he did above and beyond the low level PPP loan scam. So for him to get $40,000, ultimately what they did was he had to claim that he had more employees than just himself. Because if he claimed that he was the only employee of his business, the most he would have been able to get was around $20,000, right? That's the most he would have been able to get. Mm-hmm.
Man, nah, JT, man, I've seen his name on the list, you know, the list that's public on Google.
Right.
Yeah. When it says employees, it only say one. So I'm thinking it's just him.
Oh, so maybe he got two. So if he got $40,000, then he must have got the two.
Yeah.
The two PPP loans. Okay, all right. So now that part makes sense.
Two.
Okay, so if he's got $40,000, that's because he got two PPP loans. So for him to be able to get the PPP loan in the first place, he had to submit a fraudulent tax return. So that's crime number one, right? He submitted a fraudulent tax return with the application. He didn't do it once. He did it twice because he got two PPP loans. So that's the issue. But if you were to take the money from the PPP loan, which you received through fraudulent means, and then take that money to start a legitimate business, based on the information I'm getting from my attorney friends and my friends who work in federal agencies, that is money laundering. You're taking money that you got dirty, right? Because that's a dirty means of getting money. Bank fraud or scamming the federal government, that's getting money through a fraudulent means. Then you're taking that money to start a legitimate business, that's money laundering. Now, I think Debt Free Dad may still be in the chat, so you might want to check and see his answer to this. He probably is typing like crazy right now to answer. But based on my information, yeah, that would still be considered money laundering. Even though he took the money to do something right with it, it's still money laundering.
Yeah, man, because he started a whole little herbal business, like, you know, selling like different like shakes and protein shakes and powders and stuff. And the crazy part was he was featured on our local city news and everything. And he also has credentials, and like he's what you got credentials in? He's a CPA, because I remember a couple years ago he was working at an accounting firm, but he wanted to do more things with his life.
Hey, listen, you need to tell this friend to seek out an attorney as soon as possible. I have no idea what this person is thinking, but he is going to be a huge target. Just like Debt-Free Dad said earlier in the show, some prosecutor, some government official is going to be rubbing their hands like Birdman at the idea of being able to take down a CPA who started some herbal business with funds that he got from a fraudulent PPP loan. That's going to be front page news. And they were on the news too. Listen, I know it sounds unfair, but it's a reality of life. If the authorities can basically arrest a criminal, because he's technically a criminal, but if they can arrest a criminal that's going to get them a lot of publicity, that's going to make the news, that is going to make them look like good guys, if they have a choice between someone who they arrest that's a no-name person and someone else who did this same exact crime, but they're a big-name person, even though it sounds unfair, they will most likely go against the big-name person because it's going to give them the hype and the stuff that they need. Now, they'll still go after both, but I'm saying if they had to pick between the two, they're going to get the bigger-name person. Whoever this is, you need to tell them that they need to watch a couple of my videos, but while they're watching my videos, they need to dial up whatever defense attorney who deals in white-collar crime in their area, because they could be facing a really bad situation very soon. Like you said before, yes, Biden signed into law that the new statute of limitation to go after PPP loan scammers is now 10 years. 10 years that they can go after them. So yeah, this person, whoever they are, they need to try to work out a deal as good as possible that they can do. They're probably going to lose their license. Then they're not going to be able to work a deal, but they're going to be able to keep their license. But maybe they can work a deal where they're not being hit as hard as the federal government can hit them. All right?
Okay. Okay. Right. One more thing for you.
Sure.
One more thing for you, JT. So worst events come, if somehow he did get caught up, and I don't know who would come after him, but this, like, the business that he started with, like, all his assets from that business that he started, would it get seized or something?
This is a better question for Debt-Free Dad, but based on my information, what I know, anything that he received from the criminal activity would be subject to seizure. And if this business was created based on the funds that he got through an illegal means, the entire business and any assets of the business would be subject to seizure.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So hopefully that helps. But tell your friend to call an attorney. All right.
All right. Thanks, JT.
All right. You're welcome. Hopefully that was his friend. Hopefully he wasn't talking from like the third person. Hopefully that was your friend and it wasn't you. But man, you don't. Oh, that's a tough spot again. And once again, another person who went to school, worked hard, became credentialed, but then finds a way to become a scammer, finds a way to become a criminal. Worked your whole damn life to become an upstanding member of society. And in one little weak moment, you're a criminal. Sad. All right. Caller from 516, area code 516. You are live on the air with Pocket Watching with JT. What's going on? Caller from 516.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. I hear you now.
Hi, I have a question regarding a 1031 exchange versus a deferred sales trust.
All right, hopefully I got an answer for you. Go right ahead.
I really don't want to do the 1031 exchange, but I know if I don't do the 1031 exchange, the taxes are going to be astronomical that I would have to pay.
Okay.
So I've been reading about deferred sales trust, and no one seems to know anything about a deferred sales trust.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that I specialize in. Now, this property, I'm assuming this isn't your personal property. This is some sort of investment property or property that you inherited. Like, what type of property is this?
It's commercial property. It's investment property.
Okay. And how long have you had it?
I think since 2014.
All right. And why do you not want to do a 1031 like kind of exchange?
because what I have to purchase is not what I really want to purchase. So it's like I'm forced to buy something because the market to me has made a drastic turn. Mm-hmm. So that's really why.
Okay. All right. So I'm reading up on it. Right? I'm Googling now to get an idea. And I do kind of remember this structure. So basically what you're doing is you're selling your property and you're receiving a structured payment over time, right? So instead of getting a lot's going on in the background there. Everything okay?
I'm sorry.
All right. So basically what you're doing is you're setting up a situation where you're not going to get a big bag at once. It's an installment sale. So you'll get a little bit over time. But ultimately, just what you're doing is you're just spreading the tax burden over multiple years rather than just taking a lump sum payment and having to deal with all the tax right now. I mean, if I was you, I would contact a CFP in your area to see, does it make sense in the long run? Does it make sense to spread the payments out and pay the tax a little every year? Or does it just make more sense to just go ahead and bite the bullet, get hit with the tax payment all at once, and then now you have all the funds at once and you can actively invest or manage that money in the lump sum rather than the annual payments, I'm assuming that you would get. Because it's not as if you're not having to pay this tax. You're going to have to pay the full amount of tax. The question is, are you going to do it all at once? Are you going to spread it out over multiple years?
So you would basically say, bite the bullet, do it now, get it over and over with?
Well, it depends. Everything depends, right? So right now, your personal financial situation, are you telling me you need this money right now?
I really don't even need the money at all.
Then why not do the 1031 like kind of exchange?
Because I really can't find anything that I want, and I'm like being pressured to buy something that I probably really don't want.
Okay, I got you. Okay,
yeah. Because of the time frame.
I got you. Yeah, okay. For those who are unaware, with a 1031 like-kind exchange, you have 180 days. You have 45 days to identify the property. You have a total of 180 days to close on the other property that you're rolling over into. So yeah, if you're not finding something that you want and you're feeling pressured, then, you know, honestly, if I'm looking at it dollar for dollar, I'd rather bite the bullet, take the tax hit now, have the lump sum, and I can do more with the lump sum than rather get these annual payments. And then if an opportunity came up, what are you going to do? You just have these little annual payments. Like you, with those annual payments, you can't just all of a sudden say, yeah, now that I found a property that I want to buy, you got these little small annual payments coming in. So once again, I would suggest, you know, take a, you know, 1 hour consultation with a CFP in your area that can help you kind of look at all your options. Cause I feel like obviously your view is kind of narrow on what you need to do right now, right this second, but that CFP can have a conversation with you and take a look at all your other financial your financial picture to help give you the options where you can make the best decision for you. But, you know, if you don't need this money, I don't see the advantage of breaking it up in payments right now. I don't see the advantage of it right now based on the limited info that you gave me. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your time. Have a good night.
Absolutely. You have a great night. Yeah. See, people, it's just, you never want to be in a situation where you feel as if you're being pressured to make the decision. If you feel like you're being pressured to make the decision, you will most likely make a bad decision, right? That's the issue. You want to be in a situation where you can sit back, you can collect yourself, you can think about all the relevant things that you have in place that is going to make a difference in your life. If you feel like, you know, you got like a, you know, someone over your shoulder saying, do this now, you got to do this now, or you're going to miss out. That's always going to put you in a situation where you're not going to win ultimately. You're going to miss out on something because your view is extremely narrow. You don't know what's really out there. You know, hopefully she can find a property that makes sense for her, but it's a tough situation. It's a tough situation. All right, so I got a caller from 303 area code. Caller from 303. You are live on the air with Pocket Watching with JT. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, JT?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for calling.
I've been following for a while, but I have a few questions, or more of like a situation, right?
Okay.
I'm in a situation where I'm a high earner, right? My wife and I, we are bringing about $500,000 a year, right?
Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Real quick question. Were you born? Yeah. Are you a trust fund baby? Like, did people just give you this? Like, how did you get into a situation where you're in America and you're making that type of money?
So I definitely didn't come from money. My wife didn't either. Mm-hmm. So I went to school, and simply put, I just went to school. I majored in a STEM program. I'm an aerospace engineer by trade. My wife is a senior accountant by trade, mm-hmm. and we bought property. We literally bought property when we moved. We didn't sell it. We just rented it out. And then after about 12 years, we sold pretty much everything. Uh-huh. All our single family homes we sold, and now we're just doing multifamily.
So you're telling me that you didn't come from money. Your wife didn't come from money. You worked hard.
No.
You got an education. You had to live on some sort of budget to then also have enough money to buy real estate. You were able to do all of this in this racist country that people say that you can't get out of whatever financial situation that you're in. You're telling me that you are able to do this in America.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, I'm from Florida originally. My dad moved this country from another country. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife is from another country. She moved here when she was like one or two.
Oh.
And we live in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And we just moved to Denver, you know, at a really good time, 2007 or so. We bought up properties, and, you know, 12 years later, we had three or four properties that we bought for like $300,000. We sold them for 1.5, 1.3, 1.2, right?
Nice.
So that's pretty much what we, and we both have, you know, six-figure paying jobs too. So that helps as well.
Yeah, it also helps that you don't have a victim mentality.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you could, but it's not going to help. People don't care about that.
No.
You know what I mean? Racism is an economic problem, I think.
Yeah. All right. So you're a high earner. You're a high earner. What was your question, guy? I know I took you left. People need to hear that, because I sound like the only voice in a crowded room that's telling people, listen, you don't have to scam to make money in this country. You can, even if you don't come from a privileged background, you can work hard and you can make good money and build wealth in this country. But it is going to take some sacrifice. So I had to hear your story, because there's people who will not believe you.
Yeah, it is real. And I'll just tell you this too, just my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I think the quickest way and easiest way to kind of get wealth in this country is by making good decisions daily. Yep. It's not going to come day one or day 100. You may have to grind for a few years, but if you make the right decisions, and especially mm-hmm. if you get in the right career field, you know the money is there.
I mean, your major isn't the sexiest of majors, right? It's not like people are flooding in, because it's hard work. It's not like it's not like one of the popular majors that people go into because they know it's easy. It's hard work, but look at the reward that you get. You're making $500,000 a year just from your W-2 income, and you're also real estate investors. That's what you can do if you sacrifice early. You can get all of this reward later on.
And JT, I'll tell you this too. Mm-hmm. When I went to college, I told my counselor, I was like, whatever job pays me the most, I want to study that. So whatever it was, you know, and luckily my school had an aerospace engineering program, and that's what I majored in.
Nice. All right. So what was your core question? Your high income earner, you and your wife, what was your question?
So my thing is like, so we have this excess of income, disposable income.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a business, a real estate development company that I use to fund my bills and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I want to diversify. And like most folks, we get online and, you know, I'm a brother, so mm-hmm. I want to believe in us. And I look at all these different avenues out there, and they just seem, my spotty senses goes off when I hear some of them talk. So I want to know, what are some, like, you know, some good avenues to kind of diverse my earnings or my revenue in, so I can kind of, you know, make my money go to work for me, other than real estate.
All right. The number one question I'm going to ask, if anybody who's been around Pocket Watching with JT for any amount of time, number one question I'm going to ask is, what does your debt look like?
We debt free. We don't have any debt.
Okay.
Well, I take that back. I have a house that we live in,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we have a mortgage on that, mm-hmm. but our cars are, we bought everything cash. My wife's car cash, my car cash, my developments that I do have, I paid them off cash. So they're just
nice
revenue.
Okay. So that's good.
I have one property that I haven't started yet, and it's like a 12-unit development. It'll mm-hmm. start probably next year. I'm gonna be in debt for that, but that's my business side.
I understand. The business within itself should be able to cash flow and deal with that. Okay. So when it comes down to the home, okay, you got some debt on your personal home. Are you fully funding any retirement plans with your employers, you and your wife?
My wife has a 401k, but I know you're gonna call me, but I just don't do the 401k.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've just had way more success with real estate.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so I just don't believe in white, you know, dudes with ties and suits and stuff.
Listen, I got that. And you're clearly very successful with the real estate deals that you've been doing so far. But remember the reason why you called. Yeah. You called because you have a question about diversification, right? You're trying to find other ways other than, because you don't want to be 100% in real estate because you got this extra income.
Yeah.
What should you do with this extra income? Well, I'm going to have to tell you, most likely what would make sense is to fully fund the retirement plan that you have offered through your employer. Fully fund that. And then when you get to the point where you still have income left over from fully fund it, because you only do like $20,500, right? You make $500,000 a year. You can do $20,500. After you get past that point, I would say, listen, you need to really consider really working to get that personal mortgage down as soon as possible. And then probably you should have a conversation with a CFP and see if they can set up some kind of brokerage account. Or if you have kids, look into maybe setting up an account for their education, stuff like that. Because you've already got the real estate, and the real estate is booming. You just don't want to be 100% all in one particular industry. Because as you know, real estate can be great, but then it can have its bad season. When you have that bad season in real estate, you want to be able to make sure that you have diversification, you have investments in other things that are not related so tightly with real estate. You already have, I'm assuming, a fully funded emergency savings fund, right?
Yep. We have that like 2 years in advance, just in case, you know, something goes wrong. But just to follow up with that.
Uh-huh.
So in my head, right, you know, I'm analyzing stuff, and I'm thinking I need to acquire assets. A diversification of assets. And I didn't really think of, even though a 401k is an asset, I'm more thinking about tangible assets and the operation that I can kind of oversee, you know, that I can kind of, I guess, have a better understanding of.
I get where you're going, but here's the deal. You only have so much time in a day, okay? You have your professional career, Your wife has her professional career. I have to assume y'all have some kind of life together, right? Y'all have some sort of life together that you deal with. You also have what most people would think of as a mini real estate empire that you're running. For you to want to expand and buy other assets, which I'm assuming would be other small businesses that you would be running and operating, you don't have enough time in the day. You just don't. Why not leverage the efforts of others and invest in the market so that you are using the expertise and the time and the effort of other business owners who this is all they do 100% of the time is to operate these businesses and make sure that you are invested. Now, if you still have so much more money left over where you're fully funding your retirement account, you work with a CFP to help develop an investment plan with maybe a brokerage account, which makes sense. And you still have so much more money left over where maybe you want to take a shot at another business, but understand you've been dealing with real estate in your career all this time. What do you know of another business that's not within those industries? You got to understand there's a learning curve, right? You're right. There's a learning curve that takes place when you start a business in an industry with no experience. The things that you don't know are going to bite you in the behind. And you're going to make thousands of dollars worth of mistakes because you don't know. And even if you hire someone who does know, now you're in their pocket. Because if they don't show up, if they have an attitude, then you're stuck. You can't do anything because you hired someone who has all the industry knowledge and you're what we would refer to as dumb money. You're coming with the money, but you don't know how the hell any of this works, right? So I would say stick with the real estate. You're doing great with real estate, but diversify with fully funding your retirement plan on the job. Work with a CFP to get a brokerage account to kind of look at a full pitch of how you can invest in the market where you are limiting a certain amount of risk, but you're diversifying your investments. And just do that, man. Don't put more stress on yourself that you don't need. You don't need it. I mean, what's the point? You're already a millionaire based on the amount of debt that you said that you have and the assets that you have. You're already a millionaire. What ends up happening when you try to grow beyond the scope, that's when you're going to get in trouble. You're going to take on debt and you're going to take on risk in an industry that you're not familiar with. And it's going to put you in a situation where you're going to risk everything that you built to try to do this new thing. And when that new thing doesn't work out, everything that you built is subject to go down. I don't see a point.
Yeah.
I don't see a point. Enjoy what you've already done and just let it grow.
I got you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna drop the money messages or whatever.
Oh, the super chat. You're super chatting. I appreciate it.
On the super chat. But I appreciate it, man. And I'm gonna hit you up later too, man. You stay blessed and keep fighting the fight because we need you out here in these streets.
I'm gonna try, my brother. I'm gonna try. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You have a great night. Yeah, man. I mean, those are great calls because people don't understand that stage of life as much as we understand the other stages of life. Like, people understand what it's like to be broke. People understand living paycheck to paycheck and being deep in debt. But there is a certain degree of the unknown and the pressure of when you actually do make it, right? You make it, but then it's like, okay, what do I do now that I've made it? And you can get yourself into a situation where you can lose it all because you're doing more than what needs to be done, right? There is something to enjoying the fruits of your labor. Enjoy the fruits of your labor. Be able to enjoy all the hard work that you've done and indulge in this success that you created for yourself without losing everything. I know it seems weird, but it's like, multimillionaire. But obviously ambition can get the best of you, but you don't want your ambition to blind you to what really needs to be done. Oh, this must be the brother right here. We got. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you for the $100 super chat. Thank you. I appreciate it. I wish you have more and continued success. Just remember, slow down, bro. You got it. Slow down. There's no need to, you know, go beyond the scope of what you already know. Great in real estate, great in your career. Leverage that, and the extra money that you got, I would invest in the market. I would invest in the market, man. But contact a CFP in your area. I know a lot of CFPs in the Denver area, because for those of you who are unaware, the first CFPs were back in 1973, the first 42 CFPs, they actually graduated from the College of Financial Planning that was in Denver. So Denver should be a hotbed of great certified financial planners. All right, people, we're going to wrap this up. I got a caller from 813, and then we're going to wrap this up. So caller from 813, you are live on the air with Pocket Watching with JT. What's going on?
Hey, JT, how are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks for calling.
So I wanted to kind of you spent some time talking about business credit, folks. Mm-hmm. And I work in the business credit space too. And I've got sort of a tax question that I don't really know the answer to.
All right. Hopefully I can help you out. What's going on?
So I found out about a holding company, which is an LLC that, you know, holds the other LLCs. And right. As the revenue comes in to the child LLCs, does that revenue also count for the parent LLC? Does that revenue flow through the children LLC to the parent LLC? Meaning, if I have 10 businesses that all do $100,000 in revenue, does that holding company do the million?
No. And here's why. The net rolls up. All right. So if I have one holding company, right? So let's say I have Pocket Watcher LLC as my holding company. And under Pocket Watcher LLC, I have the money I receive from YouTube, which is a LLC underneath, the money that I receive from podcasts, and then the money that I receive from radio, right? So each one of these LLCs are within themselves, but they're all owned by the holding company. If each one of these did $10,000 in revenue, I can't then just simply say that the holding company LLC did $30,000 in revenue, because it didn't. What happens is the net is going to flow up. So if even though each one of the subsidiary LLCs, each one of these did $10,000 in revenue, but they only netted $5,000, then I can then say the holding company would have a net income of what the smaller ones did. Now, if I was having a conversation with a lender and I was explaining to them, hey, I have, you know, multiple businesses. They're all under this one umbrella. Each one of the businesses did X amount in revenue. See, now I have a conversation with the lender and they have a better picture of how much revenue that I'm bringing in annually for all the businesses. But I can't simply claim that the holding company, because the holding company is just that. The holding company has no business transactions other than the fact that it owns these other businesses. So if you want to, because what it sounds like, you want to be able to tell the story of how successful everything is. Well, you can tell that story, but you need to tell it the right way. You need to say, hey, you don't have one company, in the example that you were given, you don't have one company that does $1 million in revenue. You have 10 businesses that were doing $100,000 in revenue. And I think whatever lender that you're dealing with should understand that and say, oh, okay, well, man, you got 10 different businesses to do $100,000 in revenue. All right, well, I still want to know what you net, unless you're dealing with like, you're dealing with one of those companies that are giving you basically a payday loan, which I don't like those type of companies. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, there are lenders who will give you money based on the revenue that you bring into your business. And I'm telling you, I call them payday loans because that's basically what they are for people who are self-employed. They're like payday loans. They are extremely high interest, comparable to any other loan that you would get. And they don't care what you net because they only care about how much money comes in the door because they are attached to your business checking account and they will deduct their fees every day or every week out of your account, regardless of what your net is. They know they can pay themselves back because you have so much revenue going through your account. Man, I rambled there for a second. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. And I got a couple, one more thing I wanted to ask about is, I thought this was a great idea because mm-hmm. I see publicly traded companies do this all the time. Mm-hmm. Disney reports its earnings. It uses all of its subsidiaries' income to say, hey, look, I own ESPN and I own, you know, Disney Channel.
Right.
And those things all generate. Is that what you're talking about, or do they count the top line number?
No, I mean, if you're having a conversation with a lender and you're trying to explain the story of the financials and you're saying, hey, man, we had a great year together, all these businesses. We did $1 million in revenue. Yeah, but you can't just simply say like this holding company did $1 million, right? That's a little misleading.
Okay.
Because in that situation, it's like, no, the holding company didn't technically do $1 million. You just need to say, hey, as a group of businesses, I have several businesses. When you take a look across the different businesses, I did $1 million in revenue over these various businesses. Now, your conversation is going to be a little bit more complex than someone who has one business and that one business did $1 million worth of revenue. Your conversation is going to be a little bit more complex, but that's just what it is. You can't get around that. You just have to explain, yeah, I got a couple of different businesses. When you add them all together, we did $1 million in revenue. And they may want to say, okay, what's the risk factors in this business versus this other business? How many years has business A did X amount in revenue compared to business B? So like I said, the conversation is going to be a little bit more complex, but that's the world you live in. Because you have multiple businesses.
Yeah.
And one may be affected by a certain thing where another one, let's say like if one's in real estate and the other is in like the food industry, well, if you have a real estate bubble that bursts, that's going to affect you. But it probably won't affect as much as the food business. So that's the conversation, because at the end of the day, if someone's trying to lend you money or you're trying to get a loan from someone, they're trying to figure out the worst case scenarios. What would happen that will keep you from actually paying me back? And they need to be aware of all the factors. And if you try to massage the information to be like, yeah, I got this one business that does, you know, $1 million worth of revenue. And they say, okay, what industry is that business in? And then you say, oh yeah, it's trucking. But you really got a trucking business, you got a tax prep business, you got Airbnb, you know, you got all these other things. The lender is probably going to say that you deceived them because they thought you just had maybe one thing when you have all these other things and they weren't able to do underwriting correctly based on the information you gave them. So you just want full disclosure. That's yeah. All. Okay.
Yeah. No. And that makes sense. That makes sense.
All right. Hopefully that helped, man. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. You have a great night. All right, people, we've been doing this thing for almost 2 hours. Thank you so much for those who called in. Remember, Money Mondays, it's all about you. It's me taking on your calls, any personal financial questions that you have, any business questions that you have. I'm here to help you out. I am a certified financial planner for those of you who are very, very new. I'm not just a guy who woke up one day and decided I'm going to be a financial strategist. I'm going to be someone who just helps people with their money questions because I got a little experience in this. Listen, people pay me $450 an hour to get this type of advice. You get it absolutely free. The only thing you have to do is call me up or subscribe to the content. Next time y'all hear from me will be this Wednesday at 8 p.m. I will be joined by my brother, Mr. Orlando Miner, and hopefully you will call in and we'll have some fun together. I want to give a big shout out to all of my YouTube members. You see them on the screen right now. Each and every one of these YouTube subscribers have made the good decision in my book to help support this content and become a YouTube member. So you see it on the side there. If you want to join in, just click that button and become a member, a official Pocket Watcher of Pocket Watching with JT. Y'all guys have a great night. The Pocket Watcher is out, and I will see you guys this Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time.